And we went on to say that it's taught in law school, never ask a question that you don't know the answer to in court. You ask a question for the purpose of bringing certain information to light. This struck me as a very interesting image. It's kind of like a chess game when you get into a court situation or a legal situation. It's like a chess game, and what's going on most of the time is that only one person knows how to play chess. The other person can see the pieces on the board and recognizes their shapes, but doesn't really know the rules or the theory or the thousands of other games that have been played and won as a professional chess master would know. So the person who's a beginner at the chess game is bound to lose. It's not really a game. It's more like a slaughter. If, on the other hand, an individual knows their rights, knows the procedures, knows the law, then when you play the chess game, it is a game. It's a game of presenting information in order to bring to light the underlying principle or truth. So there's truly a question of skill in thinking and in awareness, rather than simply a battle of, quote, right against wrong, which may have very little to do with the letter of the law and the terminology of the law. One of the things that you learn in law school is that words don't mean what they mean in normal conversation. You need to know that if you're going to be on the chessboard with these people. Now, as part of the strategy of playing the game, as I understand you, the way you presented the material makes it look like this. You do not go into dispute, but you start from finding a point of agreement, and you extend that point of agreement through the entire exposition of the material in the situation until finally the so-called opposition must agree with you that you are in fact not under obligation to perform certain servitudes or give up certain rights.
Well, they're not really agreeing with you, but with the questions you ask, they are making that assertion, which you can then agree to. Let me give you an example of what happens when you ask the wrong question and you don't know the answer. As a young deputy sheriff several years ago, I had written a man a speeding ticket. I had paced him based on the certified speedometer in my police car, and I wrote down, if I remember correctly, it was 55 in a 35. However, down in the charging section, I only wrote him for 10 over, a 10-mile-an-hour discrepancy. This attorney, realizing that I was a young rookie deputy and probably didn't really know what I was doing, decided that he was going to make an issue of that, and he said, "Deputy, I notice up here you wrote 55 in a 35 zone. Is that correct?" "Yes." "And I notice down here you wrote 10 over. Is that correct?" "Yes." "Do you see a discrepancy there?" I said, "Absolutely." He says, "Can you please explain that discrepancy?" I said, "Yes, I can." I says, "Number one, I know that even though my speedometer in my police car is certified, there is still a range of error in which it can still be certified. I also know that as tires wear, there can be up to an inch to an inch and a half of tire wear, which is going to throw the speedometer in my police car even further off. There could easily be 2 to 3 to 4 miles an hour difference between what the car is actually traveling and what it is reading on the speedometer, and I know that. I also generally understand that your client's car is not going to have a certified speedometer, and so it's going to have a much wider range of probable error from the get-go. I also know that your client's car is going to have tire wear, and that could make another 2 or 3 miles an hour difference. Based upon a potential 3 or 4 miles an hour difference in my speedometer and the 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 miles an hour difference between what your speedometer on your client's car read and what they were actually going, I wanted to give your client the maximum benefit of the doubt." At that point, the attorney promptly wanted a sidebar, and the prosecutor and the attorney went up and talked to the judge and agreed that it was time for a plea bargain. No further testimony needed. He asked a question he did not know the answer to, and it bit him big time.
Now, in the various examples that you went through, you talked about a sequence of facts that needed to be established when someone presented you with an obligation or a tax or some other legal imperative. And you said first, you agree that if you have an obligation, you really should pay this tax or fine or whatever it is.
Absolutely.
First, you agree, if there is an obligation, yes, I agree, we should pay. Then you ask them to identify themselves and to say who it is that they represent or who is their principal that they are speaking for. And is it the Republic or is it a municipal corporation? And once that's been determined, then you have a series of other questions. So what I'm seeing is that you're basically saying to the person, yes, I agree with you. Now show me exactly what is stated in the law that says that I should do this.
Absolutely. I want to live up to my obligations. Please show me exactly what my obligations are and where they come from.
So rather than dispute them, you make them give you the information that you require in order to prove that you are right.
If they have it.
If they have it. And if they don't have it, well, then there's no discussion.
They have to come back, as we have seen in some letters from the IRS, that says we're unable to locate the information you have requested.
See, now this is very different from our reflex or knee-jerk reaction, which says that as soon as we're charged with something, we have to protest, deny, and disagree.
Which then immediately invokes the judicial power of the court to determine whether or not you have the obligation based on what has been asked and answered, and then impose the appropriate penalty. The court has no judicial power unless the parties have agreed to an actual controversy. And if the state says you were speeding, you say, no, I wasn't. The only issue that can be in controversy is how fast you were going and how fast the speed limit was at that particular point in time. However, if you say, wait a minute, how do speed limits apply to me under those circumstances?
Please show me.
Please show me how that speed limit applies to me in that particular circumstance. Now they have to prove that there is some type of relationship upon which they can impose that particular speed limit upon you under that totality of circumstances.
So before you say, no, I wasn't, before you disagree, it's first very important and much wiser to say, show me why that applies to me.
Exactly. For example, if you were flying low in your airplane, would the 70-mile-an-hour speed limit on the freeway apply to you? Not likely. As a matter of fact, I heard a story several years ago where a man was in California going at a rather high rate of speed down the freeway, and the officer pulls him over and says, boy, you were just flying down the freeway. May I see your pilot's license? And the man happened to be a licensed pilot, and he pulled out the pilot's license and showed it to the officer. And the officer says, that's not what I wanted to see, and promptly arrests him and takes him before the magistrate. And the magistrate says, what kind of case do we have here? Speeding, Your Honor, the officer says. And the judge looks at the man and says, well, can you tell me what happened? Well, I was going down the freeway. This officer pulled me over. He asked me for my pilot's license. I showed it to him, and he arrested me. And the judge looked back at the officer and says, did you ask him for a pilot's license? Yeah. Did he show you a pilot's license? Yes. Then what are you doing here? Case dismissed. Talk about the wrong subject matter, you get the right answer to the wrong question. Stick to the right question, you get the right answer to the right question, and you can get the right resolution.
In closing, although we started this discussion by talking about the legal form of our government, and we're ending up back with administrative procedure, what would be the best way for a student to educate themselves in these two areas, having been given this foundation?
There is a lot of additional training available. It can't all be in this course. There's a resource center available that will guide you to a lot of resources where you can obtain study materials, research materials, and additional information, as well as go to whoever provided this course to you and ask them about additional seminars and presentations that are available.
Some of the terms that have been flowing around or in conversation in the community of people who are studying this material have to do with this whole notion of whether you belong to the Republic or whether you belong to the corporate United States, the whole idea of expatriating out of one and repatriating into another. Can you clarify what that's about and give some ideas to how that relates to what we've been discussing?
Well, let's go back to the procedure that we've just been discussing and ask a few simple questions. I know there's a lot of people out there that have expatriated and repatriated, and there is no problem with doing that. However, you should probably ask yourself a question before you feel the need to do that. Who is claiming that you're patriated to the wrong place? And can they prove it? If the corporation comes to you and says you're subject, you say, if I'm subject, I have an obligation. Please provide the underlying documentation upon which I am subject.
Let's take an example of this in terms of something concrete, perhaps taxes or some other issue, and show me how this is applied.
Okay, there's a lot of people out there that are teaching that birth certificates create an obligation. And let's assume for the moment that they do, and we're not going to get into the merits of that position at this time, but we're going to assume for the purposes of this discussion that your birth certificate makes you a subject and that that creates an obligation that they can take whatever part of your labor and productivity they deem necessary as taxes. The beauty of that situation comes through the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment says, yes, you may very well be that subject, slave, serf, or whatever else you want to be called, in the democracy, in the corporation. However, Article 14 in Amendment says you have equal protection of the law, one of which is due process, which is the right to say, excuse me, you who claim to be my master, but please provide for me in writing the underlying document upon which your claim lies. If, in fact, the birth certificate does give them the authority to tax your labor and productivity, then it's up to them to produce it to the record, at which time you may or may not have something to controvert. If they never produce it, you have nothing to controvert because they say, we have no such documentation. Well, if you have no documentation that I have an obligation, then thank you for asserting that I have no obligation. I will be happy to agree with you.
The last question in my mind is that given this beginning understanding of how things really are put together, what's your advice? Would you say that someone should go forward and begin to speak this way and act this way? Or is there a more prudent way of integrating this knowledge and then gradually applying it, if necessary?
Let me give you a little analogy. Would you take a new recruit the first week of boot camp and drop him into a hot fire combat zone? Not likely. If your study level is based upon a little bit of information here, a little bit of information there, and the reasonably comprehensive outline of information in this course, you do not have the expertise, tools, or knowledge to go do battle in the world of law and commerce. I would encourage you to get a hold of whoever introduced you to this training program and ask them what additional training is available. Now, I am a little bit different. I'm a little bit unique in that I made a decision many years ago when I first saw, as a deputy sheriff, the discrepancies in the system, and it was exposed to me that there was a remedy. I took it upon myself to spend many, many years of research and study trying to find what that remedy was. After I had done all the theoretical research necessary, I made a conscious decision to start living it with the knowing understanding that at some point it would probably wind up in my being arrested, it would probably wind up in my going to jail, and it would probably wind up in a significant legal battle. But that was a conscious decision on my part that I had learned all the theoretical law there was to learn, and that the only way I could fine-tune my skills would be in combat, so to speak. I do not recommend that for most people. Instead, take the opportunity to take advantage of what we've learned who have placed ourselves in that position, either intentionally like myself or unintentionally like many others, and learn from them rather than having to walk through the fire yourself. It is not a comfortable position to be in. And there are many more resources available. We're hearing more and more people are putting to use what we've learned after extensive study and being able to avoid many of the complications that some of us had to go through to learn how to fine-tune these procedures.
And as more of us become more knowledgeable and are able to speak as a group, taking advantage of the pioneering work that's been done by individuals who've been willing to test the situation and go to jail and get out of jail and learn how to operate in these venues, I think that the way in which an individual can deal with this is going to become easier and easier, but we are at a beginning stage.
Absolutely. And remember, during the American Revolution that started this entire great country, less than 2% of the people were actively involved. Less than 5% of the people were even backdoor involved. And so less than 5% of the people organized and created this great country. And if we can get even 1 to 2% of the people in this country to start asking the right questions, we can take our country back.
For additional information on this topic, go to your online resource center at www.pqionline.cc, click on Products and Solutions, and go to Disc Number 7.